Right now, it is time to get a hold of Tim Luke and Greg Straub, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack, Treasure Quest Appraisal Group, TQAG.com on the web. And how far away from 18 degrees are you guys down there in Florida? Hello? It says they're hooked up. Why can't I hear them? Waiting for others to join. It's just me in the call. Ring the group. Here we go. We'll see what happens here. I'm ringing the group. Aha! We have two people that are unavailable. Now we've got Tim. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
Greg, are you there too? I guess not.
Huh.
It's just you, well, Tim. Where is Greg?
Well, I'm in Washington, D.C. I'm in our nation's capital.
Well, you know, it's first it said you were both unavailable, and then it said, you're available. So let me just see if I can... let's just see if I can find him here one more time again.
Okay.
Well, this is the way it works with our good friends. Add people to the call. There we go. There it is. It says he's online. So let's add him and see what happens here. Calling Greg Straub. I tell you, Tim, it was always exciting around here in the morning.
It was. I would imagine.
Now it says Greg is. It says he's unavailable. Huh. Well, you know what? I'll keep hitting that button to try him and see what happens. Maybe if he reboots, we'll be lucky enough. He reboots, we'll get him on the air. But I'm in a quandary now because if I try to contact him, I'd have to hang up on you.
Right. Oh, got it.
And you know what? I one fish in the hand.
The way your day is going?
Right. That's right.
The way your day is going.
Well, anyway, here's an interesting story. Hey. And it's connected to today's society. We've got inoculations. We've got people that want to vaccinate, people that don't want to vaccinate. Well, there's an auction up for letter. Catherine the Great showing her support for inoculations.
Inoculations.
Really?
Yes. Yes. I think people get myopic about thinking this is, what's happening today hasn't happened ever before, and we're living in these crazy times. You know, humanity has been through a number of plagues and a number of pandemics, and this has always been the case. So it's fascinating. Who is selling it? Does it say who's auctioning the letter?
No, it's just a banner headline, and it was just posted. Story's not there yet because it was only posted about an hour and a half ago. But I find it interesting because you're right. If people were to go back and just type in inoculations or vaccinations, you'll see how they were reacted to over the years.
Yeah. No. And it's been a major thing. Major things have. I mean, throughout history, all of these different plagues and pandemics have led to, you know, great things. And that's when you're in the midst of it, it's difficult to see that. But it's interesting to also be able to track historic figures that are saying, no, hey, we need to get behind this because this is the only way that we're going to be able to move forward.
All right. I just find it pretty interesting. I want to go back after that's done, and see exactly how it went.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And find out what, you know, like the not only the interest, but you know the level. See where it was estimated, and then see where it ends up selling. I'll have to look for that as well. I will take a look for that.
There's another story here that I'm going to have trouble with, but I'm going to talk about it anyways because. A record was set for Latin American art. Frida Kahlo set a new auction record at Sotheby's, $283 million. He beat out Diego Rivera for it. And figure this, the guy's a crypto billionaire who won. So, But he's the $78.4 million. Giacometti is that what they said? See, so I'm completely lost here, and I see a picture of something, and it doesn't look like anything I'd like to have in my house.
So there's the three different, you know, you've got the three different artists that are there. So Frida Kahlo just as really coming into her own, and, you know, especially versus Diego Rivera, because Diego Rivera was the reigning Latin American artist for a long time and was able to really generate massive sums at auction. And just in the last probably 15, 20 years, Frida Kahlo has really come into her own in commanding more and higher prices at auction because, you know, there's limited amounts of items that are out there, and they're really appreciating the artwork that was done by the artist. So in those two, just that she has surpassed Diego Rivera, that's and a new record, that's wonderful, wonderful to hear. I do like her work. I like Diego Rivera's work as well. But when you get to Giacometti, that's a whole nother, it's very abstract in some cases, especially for the sculptures and some of the things that the appeal is, like you said, it's not something that you would have, but there are a number of people that do really appreciate and seek out Giacometti's pieces. Now, with Giacometti and these sculptures, the difficulty is that there are a lot of fakes that are out there as well. And a couple of years ago, I was down in Miami and we were meeting with a client, and at an undisclosed location, he had to bring us his what he thought was a Giacometti sculpture. And I'm not an authenticator, I'm not an expert in that, but you could just tell that this was not, just by the way that it was done. And I advised the client, I said, well, you need to get this further, you know, looked at, studied, and have somebody say that this is, in order for you to move on to the next step, which would be the sale, or even appraisal, because without that, it's just not, you just can't do it. But there are a number of just knockoffs that are out there that people say, oh, well, this is Giacometti style, or, you know, because it does command a lot of money when it does sell. So, but it does go to the tastes, I think, that where things are moving in the marketplace. And it's interesting to see Latin American artists really starting to make big, major impacts, especially at auction.
All right. Kanye West made the auction news, you know.
Oh, what did he do now?
Well, he sold his ranch. First of all, I would have never thought that Kanye West would have a ranch, I think, out in Wyoming, Cody, Wyoming. Oh. He sold a ranch, and on that ranch, he had a fleet. He had a fleet of Ford trucks. Okay, so he got together with the dealership that he purchased these Ford trucks over with. They contacted an auction house. Okay, mm-hmm. And Mueser Brothers Auction. But anyway, they had 137,000 views. It was strictly online, 800 bids, and there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There were 7 different trucks on it. Okay, they made over $500,000.
Oh wow!
And listen to this. It's not like they're antique. 2017 Ford, 2016 Ford. 2020 Ford Expedition, 2000 Ford Expedition, an F-150 Raptor. I mean, and he made over $500,000 simply because it's Kanye West, and somebody can say, hey, I'm riding around in a truck that Kanye West had.
Right. Oh, my God. That possibly. That blows my mind for things like that. That's where the celebrity factor, you know, the intangible aspect of the tangible personal property. So the truck itself, I mean, those don't sell for that much, obviously. And just to have, and you said there were only seven in the sale?
Yeah, and they're, like I said, they were all in between 2016 and 2021 automobiles that you can that you can buy and probably pay a little less.
Right. Well, a lot less, even brand new.
I mean, but you know,
with like no miles. That's fascinating. But see, that is again that part of the marketplace that is very difficult to predict, because if those were to come up and you were just going to, and I'm sure the estimates or wherever the starting bids were not that high, and here you have these pieces selling like crazy, and I think that's just a lot of desirability in the marketplace for these items, but also the name recognition. The people are like, oh, well, this once belonged to Kanye West.
Well, anyways, I saw a Kanye West name there. And I, what's he auctioning off now? And I see
what's
trucks,
yeah.
Trucks, trucks. And you know, I cannot see Kanye West living in Wyoming. I just can't. But then again, why not? I guess. But he sold the ranch and he sold the trucks on it. All right, now Turner Auctions has a Return to Oz collection of children's books that's coming up. I think December 10th, and they're regular books. Okay, it was a series of different books, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, and other books, but it looks like this is going to bring in a big bucks as well. And it's, you know, it's not like Bambi can rank up there with other great books, but he's got 195 lots that are going out for bid.
Oh, I mean, and that is a lot, and that has to be a major collection. Somebody who spent a lot of time putting the auction or putting their collection together. And I think, and there's also, so I see that there's also 31 with autographs. So rare limited editions and autographs. There is a major cult following for the Oz books and for the Oz, the Wizard of Oz, the whole series, you know, and like you said, it does not stand up to Bambi or some of the other major Disney characters. It's a lot of these, especially the Frank Baum books, the early Oz writer, major people that they'll seek out first editions, but also illustrations or other things that were part of that book and that whole series. And I think that there is still major love and affinity for, and especially, you know, the movie is out and or the movie, whenever it's on Turner Classics or whenever it's on, I mean, people just love the whole story of The Wizard of Oz. And whether it's the film, whether it is any of the memorabilia from the film, but then what started it all are these books and the Return to Oz. I just remember when I was working at Christie's, and even back in the 90s, there was always, if we could get anything that had anything to do with the books, we would add those to the auction, because we just knew that there would be a major bidding war over a lot of the, whether it's the illustrations or the books themselves. And the thing with the books is that it's difficult, you know. I mean, we talk about different asset classes and collecting, and with books, you have to be very careful with the environment that they're in, because if it's too humid, you have to make sure that it's temperature controlled, because that will just, if it is too humid, it inspires a lot of the molds and the growth on the paper, which is not good. And so it's really being able to take care of this. And it's interesting because this is a large it's a private collection that somebody probably amassed over several years, probably a decade or more, and now coming up for auction and being sold. So an opportunity that if they were maintained and then also having that provenance, you know, so of coming from that collection, all of that plays into the desirability of the collection.
You know, I'm looking at some of the books that are up there. There's the first British edition of The House at Pooh Corner, and it's in a dust jacket. And we have a show with Darren Winstead that deals with books. And if a book is in a dust jacket and it's in great shape, this is estimated to go at $2,000 to $3,000. Not a lot, but $2,000 to $3,000. But also, you know, there's a pop-up book, the pop-up yeah. Wizard of Oz book. There were 50 copies made, and this is number 13. So this is where the value comes in. It's valued at $1,500 to $2,500. Now these are pretty interesting prices, especially I think if you are a book collector, these things appear to be in a decent price range.
Correct, and also understand that those auction estimates are just that. They're estimates, but they're also marketing tools. So it's drawing people in, say, oh, I think I might have a chance at that. Let me put a bid in for this or do that. And they are designed to really inspire bidding. So it's in most cases, but they're also there to give an accurate, you know, a reflection of, okay, marketability, because the auction estimate really doesn't have a whole lot to do with the value. That's just expectations and the thoughts of where the actual final selling price may be. And we've talked about it a lot of times where, you know, they'll have it estimated at $2,000 to $3,000, and you get what I like to call testosterone bidding, and you get a number of people just, no, I've got to have that, got to have that. And it crosses a line of, okay, is it really worth that? Or did somebody need to add that because they needed to complete their collection and they wanted to, you know, really go for it with this piece? So there's a number of things that go into the whole value side of it, but the pop-up books are those you don't see a whole lot out there, because if they were used, then the paper either gets worn or the edges, there's creasing, breakage, damage. So when you find pop-up books at auction, they usually are in amazing condition and probably haven't been really popped up or really used, but they are a lot of fun. And the graphics and the colors on some of these pop-up books are just amazing. So those are fun to have.
Now, you just mentioned crossing the line. This is an interesting story. This auction happened, and you probably know about this. It was an auction of pre-Columbian artifacts at Christie's in Paris in the middle of November. And there was a lot of people that complained about it simply because they thought it was wrong to sell these artifacts, and it wasn't verified or anything like that. There were petitions that were circulated that garnered over 50,000 signatures to halt the sale. Anyways, it went on, but only a third of the lots, two-thirds of the lots sold, one-third didn't sell. Is this something that auction houses go through where they decide, even though there's some bad press with this, they're going to go through with it anyway?
So, well, you know, it sometimes, and it really, it would depend on the circumstances and what this is. So if it is looted or stolen, and if there is adequate evidence to the fact that these were looted, stolen, obtained illegally, and it comes to light, you know, I mean, usually the auction house can only do so much and does a lot of due diligence prior to even advertising the sale. But once the items go out and they're on public display or just up on the digital catalog, and people can see that, more and more people really take a look at it, and then information comes out, and if during that time period that there is something that's credible, and maybe it does cross the line, then there have been cases where, yes, they've had to pull items from auctions. Others, it's, well, let's go ahead. It's not that bad. But what happens is the negative press, and just like you said, like a third of the sale did not sell because there was just a lot of outcry as to where these came from. And I think it was one of, and I forget which government, but there was a government in Central America that just had contacted the auction house and said, no, those are ours and we need these. And I think several were pulled from the auction as well. So there's when that all happens, that spreads a taint over the whole the rest of the auction, because they said, well, if these were not vetted properly, well, what about these? What are these other items? So that does become a difficulty for auction houses, and it's always difficult when the catalog goes out. That's when you start to, like I said, it goes out to the masses, and then people start seeing it and start reporting or calling in or saying, well, wait a minute, no, this was obtained illegally. And again, it comes down to you need proper evidence. It isn't just saying, hey, you know, this isn't right, you've got to pull this from the sale. When a government comes and says, hey, we have records and here, this used to be in this museum and it's no longer, or was at a specific site, we now are claiming this. Those are all issues that auction houses hate to have to deal with, and especially with the consignor. Just think, if you were the consignor and unknowingly you may have purchased something and thought that you had clear title to it, but perhaps it was not as scrupulous, or was not as scrupulous of a dealer that you purchased it from, or the dealer's no longer in business and you can't track them down. That becomes very difficult then, because you're kind of SOL and you have to turn that over because it was purchased, it was not purchased legally, let's just say. It doesn't have clear title. And if pieces like that don't have clear title, that's when it opens up for other governments to come in or other entities that can say, hey, here's our evidence. This needs to be pulled from the auction, or let's sort this out before it's going to be sold. And that's happened in the past too, where the auction house just acts as the mediator and says, okay, we'll hold on to the pieces, but you all need to decide which way it goes and who does have proper ownership for these pieces. So there's an awful lot that goes into when these things come up, and especially when you have items that may have been taken from a dig, taken from a war-torn area, and more people are up in arms about that, is because if these were specifically dedicated to either this particular museum or this particular country, then they should go back.
All right. Well, let Greg know we tried to reach him a couple of times, so he doesn't think we just blew him off. Because give him a call. Because now he was showing green for a while, but now he's not showing anything at all.
Anything.
All right, Tim. I'll speak to you.
I'm in D.C. and I'll be back home next week. I'm here with the Appraisal Standards Board working on the uniform standards of professional appraisal practice and doing client meetings. So looking forward to talking to you next week.
All right, Tim. Take care. Have a good week.
You too, buddy. All bye-bye.
Right. Tim Luke, the Frick and Frack of Nick and Knack, Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys, here on Robinhood Radio. Of course, you can also hear these guys, on demand, and that is at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand, click on Appraise This with Tim Luke and Greg Strom.